This is the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor with Ernesto Araújo, former foreign minister of the Republic of Brazil, and Brazil fan onto the round of 16 in the World Cup, and Joseph Umar, executive director of Secure Free Society. We go to Venezuela, and this surprising headline: Chevron can resume key role in Venezuela's oil output. And this is a report that comes from Houston. Chevron Corporation, Saturday, just passed, received a U.S. license to allowing the second largest U.S. oil company to expand its production in Venezuela and bring the South American country's crude oil to the United States. The decision grants broader rights for the last big U.S. oil company still operating in U.S.-sanctioned Venezuela. However, it restricts any cash payments to Venezuela, which could reduce the oil available to export. Joseph, I come to you because while this looks like a big oil story and perhaps something to do with the U.S. in some way mitigating the price of gasoline, it does also look like bringing Maduro in from the cold. I use Cold War language because Maduro is part of a chain of capitals: Moscow, Beijing, Tehran, and I mentioned the Hezbollah of Beirut, a chain of capitals that are anything but favorable to the United States and our capitalist system. So how do you interpret this Venezuela Chevron story? Is this a negotiation by cash? Good evening again.
Good evening, John. No, so that's a good point, because it doesn't seem like this is just about oil or getting more oil into the United States because of whatever shortages that may be present. I say that because of two reasons. One is it makes no sense to basically turn away from more reliable sources of oil from, say, the Keystone Pipeline, which the Biden administration did not want to move forward with, or even from more stable democratic partners in the region, such as the neighbor Guyana to Venezuela, that has done a large discovery of new reserves of oil. And in fact, the Biden administration has not pursued, and from my understanding, also has vetoed a loan to Guyana to build the infrastructure to produce that oil. So if we're looking for oil, Venezuela is probably the last place we should be looking, and we have ignored other more reliable, stable places that we could get the oil from. The second part to that, John, is that the Venezuelan oil market has been collapsed, and has been collapsed before the sanctions. The Venezuelan oil market, which at one point was producing 1.3, 1.5 million barrels per day of oil, before the sanctions were launched, and I say really it's before 2019, that's when the intense sanctions began under the maximum pressure campaign of the Trump administration, Venezuela was producing about 200,000 barrels per day. So it went from 1.3, 1.5 million to 200,000 in the matter of a few years. And $200,000 is a dent. It's not going to really help us much at all here in the United States. Not to mention that now, since the sanctions, a lot of that Venezuelan oil is being refined by Iranian companies. Iranian companies that are also sanctioned because they're tied to the IRGC and Hezbollah and other actors. So really, this is a big mess, John. And it doesn't make sense that this is about oil. This has to be about something else. My guess, John, is this is about basically a effort by the Biden administration to go to elections in Venezuela with the Hail Mary hope that at some point, for some reason in Venezuela, there's going to be a democratic opening to have a free and fair election. There is nothing to suggest that that's going to be the case. I believe this is a concession that was given by the Biden administration on a demand that was made by the Maduro regime, and this is only going to benefit the regime itself.
My memory, Joseph, is that the oil fields of Venezuela have deteriorated badly by the abuse of Chavez first and then Maduro. And at one point, I believe the army was welcomed in to the oil fields to supervise for Chavez many years ago before his untimely death. And we're looking at not something that can pump the oil of the 1970s, 1980s, an extremely reduced capacity. Suggesting, of course, again, that this is an interpretation as you've just brought forward. This has to do with state-to-state negotiation, not with oil.
No, you're right, John. And yeah, you can go back all the way to 2002 when Hugo Chavez basically purged the state-owned oil enterprise, which is called PDVSA in Venezuela, and he replaced them with crony oil executives, and then more recently under the Maduro regime, replaced them with military officers. There's people that are running Venezuela's oil industry that know nothing about oil or petroleum, and that's a fact. And so, yeah, I think that that's very much what's happening, and I don't think this is not a coincidence that this happened at the same time that the Venezuelan opposition or the interim government led by Juan Guaido went back to the negotiating table with the Maduro regime in Mexico City. So there was an agreement that was produced, another preliminary agreement that was produced between the two parties this past Saturday, which basically had to do with a UN mandated fund that's going to begin, I guess, sometime soon to be able to alleviate the humanitarian conditions inside Venezuela. But what I caution the Guaido people, the opposition, the Guaido administration, what I caution them is that there's plenty of evidence in the world that exists, including in places as dictatorial as Syria, to where UN mandated funds often play to the benefit of the regime because the regime controls the local conditions in which those funds are going to be received. And that's the same thing that's happening in Venezuela. If this is advertent or this is willful, it doesn't matter because the result's going to be the same. We are essentially entrenching the Maduro regime into power indefinitely inside Venezuela. We are opening up Maduro to the international banking and financial system by alleviating sanctions. And we're basically welcoming Maduro back into the region of democratic nations, which is becoming less democratic every day.
Ernesto, Joseph points to the news from Mexico City within these last days about negotiations between the Maduro regime, which the U.S. still regards as illegitimate, and the Guaido government that the U.S. recognizes as legitimate. This from Reuters. A delegation representing the government of Venezuela, President Nicolas Maduro, arrived in Mexico City on Friday last, Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving in the U.S., to sign a, quote, social agreement, end quote, with its political opponents after talks between the two sides have been on ice for more than a year. Mediated by Norway, the negotiations will resume after months of informal meetings and could ease U.S. soil sanctions on Venezuela while boosting all major Chevron's activities in the country's energy sector. There are a lot of directions to go here, but this does look like a cash-for-cash deal in some fashion, and Guaido doesn't look like going to be the winner. How do you read all of these motions, Mexico City, Chevron in Houston, Washington to Caracas? What is your interpretation? Thank you, Ernesto.
So, John, I think this is a big mistake by the U.S. administration. People say that politics is about identifying friends and foes, right? And Venezuela is clearly not a friend, not only of the United States, not a friend of freedom or a friend of our values, the values that we share across the hemisphere. So they are basically, giving hope for that regime that they will get along with what they're doing, which is destroying their country and financing the destruction of other countries and coordinating that from Caracas. So if you want to, have a negotiation between Maduro and the legitimate government, you should reinforce the hand of the legitimate government and not reinforce the hand of Maduro. And that's what they seem to be doing, reinforcing the hand of Maduro in those negotiations. So this only seems to legitimize not only a classic dictatorship, but a dictatorship that is based on terrorism and drug trafficking and everything that we know. Whatever you do in favor of Maduro, you're doing that also in favor of Tehran and Moscow and Putin. So it doesn't make sense to support the Ukraine and the war against Russia and make the life so much easier for Maduro.
Let's make this even more complicated, Joseph. Okay, arriving in the Mexican capital with the 9-person delegation from Venezuela to Mexico City, the Maduro regime to Mexico City to meet with Guaido's representatives. Arriving with was Camila Fabri. Who is she? The wife of Colombian businessman Alex Saab. Who is he? Saab's extradition to the United States in October of 21 on money laundering charges angered the Venezuela government and prompted the suspension of the talks. Joseph, only you and Ernesto can unpack this. I'm going in so many directions. A Colombia businessman who was seen as a money launderer, I believe, involving Hezbollah, Tehran. I'm a little rusty on all of these connections, Joseph. It's like we're drawing a wiring diagram that's running around the earth. This looks like Saab is part of the negotiation. They want him released. Is that what it looks like to you?
No, absolutely, John. That's exactly what it is. And you're right. Alex Saab was a mediator, was a facilitator between Venezuela and Iran, Turkey, and even Russia for a specific period of time. And he's not even from Venezuela. He's a Colombian Lebanese businessman that used to live off the coast of Colombia in the city of Barranquilla. And so this was one of the early demands that the Maduro regime made earlier this year when they were negotiating also in Mexico City. They made the demand that they wanted Alex Saab freed. They appointed Alex Saab as one of the negotiators on behalf of the Maduro regime, which is obviously impossible because he's sitting in a penitentiary in southern Florida because he's undergoing trial for all the money laundering crimes that he's been accused of. So obviously that wasn't going to happen, but they got the next best thing, I guess, for them, which is they got Alex Saab's wife. And I think that to me, that's signaling that the Maduro regime is expecting some type of quid pro quo about the incarceration of Alex Saab. Now, that case is still ongoing, so we don't know what the final verdict is going to be. But, I mean, it should be guilty because the guy has – I mean, their only defense, as far as I've known, that his defense lawyers have presented was that he was a diplomat, so he has some kind of diplomatic immunity, even though he was not born in the country, even though he comes from Colombia, even though he didn't have a diplomatic passport when he was traveling. So there's all these reasons to suggest he's not a diplomat. He was just a facilitator. But that's the defense that his attorneys have presented. So he should probably be convicted. But in today's environment, you never know. And what I think the Maduro regime is signaling is that they expect to have him back in Venezuela in short order.
Ernesto, I've not asked this question since the election, but is there any long-term connection between Lula da Silva, former president in the early part of this century, and the Maduro regime? Or was that all Chavez to Lula, and Maduro is a stranger to Lula da Silva?
Oh, no, not a stranger at all. Of course, during Lula's term, Chavez was the president in Venezuela, so he got to negotiate with Chavez and gave a lot of money and investment to Chavez. Brazil supported economically and politically the creation of the destruction of Venezuela that we're seeing now. So Maduro, Lula knows Maduro personally less, but he already made all the signs that he's going to revert our policy and consider Maduro the legitimate president. And this is not only a political move. He will certainly revert to the policy of financing or helping to finance the dictatorial regime in Venezuela. Why? Not only because of personal sympathy, but because both belong to the same movement. Again, pardon me to insist, but the São Paulo Forum, the coordination, the network of socialist criminal regimes and projects across Latin America. So they are more than natural allies. They are partners in the same gang. So we're not dealing with set of socialist governments that coordinate among themselves. No, this is a criminal gang. And unfortunately, now Brazil under Lula is going to be a part of that. And the economic might of Brazil, although we are expecting an economic downturn because of Lula's announced policies, but whatever we have will be also used to finance those projects in not only in Venezuela, but in Colombia, in Peru, in Bolivia, etc.
However, is it not logical that if Lula da Silva involves himself in Maduro, he's going to be welcoming in some aspect of the connection between Tehran, a sanctioned state, and Brazil? Is that understood in Brazil, yeah, that Tehran is going to show up for business if you let Caracas in?
Oh yes, definitely. And I think this is a plus for the people who are going to run foreign policy under Lula and for Lula himself. During the Lula regime, the first Lula regime in Brazil, the country got a lot closer to Tehran, a lot closer, and away from Israel, away from the Arab countries, away from the West. They tried to help, basically trying to help Tehran to get along with their nuclear program. They always bought the Iranian narratives regarding that. So this is part of it. This is not a bug. This is part of the design of the system.
Ernesto Araújo, former foreign minister of the Republic of Brazil, Joseph Omar, executive director of Secure Free Society. This is the New World Report, and we're headed back to Mexico City because the president of the United States has announced his intention to visit. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.